Ours to Protect, brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Budget 2026 and speaking with Niall Conroy of the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. We'll also hear from a leading plastics recycling company, Novoplast. Its CEO and founder, Neil Skeffington, has also been speaking with student journalist Philip Keegan.
Yes, yeah, so I suppose in overall terms, you know, our advice would have been framed by the fact that the economy is still performing really well. We still have, you know, record levels of employment that's still growing quite rapidly. And, you know, wages are, on average, growing faster than inflation. So, you know, on average, consumers are seeing an increase in their ability to buy goods and services. I suppose our advice then from that is typically you would think budgetary policy should pump money into the economy when it's weak and take money out when the economy is quite strong. So we don't think this is a particularly appropriate time for the government to be introducing a large package of budgetary measures, pushing more into an economy that's already performing quite strongly as it is. We think that should be reserved for periods where the economy is weak. So a good example of that really will be during the COVID-19 pandemic, right? So due to public health restrictions, large parts of the economy were shut down, lots of people were unemployed, and the government, quite appropriately in our view, pumped lots of money into the system at that stage through various supports. We think that's the time to be doing that, not when the economy is already performing well and doesn't really need the support.
People might hear that and understand the logic, but pay packets are not going far enough and it's harder to heat homes and buy food. So why is it a bad idea to pump money into the economy now?
Yeah, so first of all, you should be trying to, like a household owner, you should be saving for a rainy day, right? So we know that there will be a downturn at some stage, and the more restraint that the government shows now, the more firepower it will have to deploy when there is the next downturn. So we don't want a repeat of the situation that we had during the financial crisis, where the government ideally would have been putting lots of money into the economy to support people who were unemployed or businesses that were struggling, but they weren't able to do that because the government was basically insolvent. So by making savings today, that means they're better placed to be able to support people in society when they really need it. In terms of the dangers of kind of pumping money into the economy now when it's already strong, like typically you would think that would increase the cost of living. So that would typically lead to higher inflation, higher prices, particularly for things that are domestically generated. So lots of things that people consume are produced abroad, so what the government does doesn't really impact on that. But you think of domestic services that you might be consuming, or things that are made within Ireland, the prices of those may be a little bit higher if the government is pushing more money into an economy that's already performing well.
What do you think of the budget overall, if we want to do things in a more environmentally and sustainable way?
So overall, we'd probably say that the package of measures that was introduced was probably a little bit too big on balance. So, you know, spending is set to increase by almost 8% next year, which is a pretty fast pace of growth. You know, faster than you would think that the economy would typically be growing by. So that kind of is pushing more money into the economy. On the other side, you know, there were some tax cuts announced. Now, there were some revenue raising measures there as well that I'm sure we'll talk about, like carbon tax and PRSI going up. You know, I think a lot of people are feeling that there wasn't a great deal in the budget there for them, but there were a lot of measures there. It's just it's not being directly reflected, say, in your payslip or in things that you would directly consume. But there is a lot of additional spending that is planned to occur next year. And we know from experience, if the government says there's going to be an increase in spending of 8% next year, it's likely it will be significantly more. We've seen large overruns repeated in recent years. So previous experience said to go by, the spending increases that were outlined, maybe even larger than what was announced last Tuesday.
Climate change is here and the impacts are real. What measures have been taken as part of Budget 2026 to deal with it?
Yeah, so if you take the kind of climate-related measures that were introduced, a lot of what we saw really was an extension of existing measures that were in place. So if you take something like the subsidy that's there for people to transition to electric vehicles, it wasn't increased or decreased. It's still at the same level, but it's been extended out to 2030. So no major change there, really. There was an increase in the carbon tax, which, you know, in theory should further incentivize people to transition away from fossil fuels, and should, you know, make it more economically viable for people to transition to cleaner electricity. So that is one positive move that has been kind of occurring over a number of years now. I suppose the other big ticket item that the government would probably point to would be that they've given a lot of increased funding to both Airgrid and ESB in order to facilitate investments in both the electricity grid and generating more renewable power. So that was kind of announced as part of the National Development Plan, but that was a big part of what was announced during the budget as well. There were smaller measures as well. You know, there's a tax exemption first. If you have, say, solar panels on your house and you have some excess energy that you manage to harvest that you don't need and you want to sell back to the grid, the first €400 of that you sell back is not subject to any tax. So there's a disregard there. So there is some improvements for the tax treatment there. So there are some measures, but, you know, they're relatively modest in the big picture of if you think there needs to be a radical transformation in how our society operates in order to meet some of our climate targets.
So was it fair to say that there was nothing really radical in it?
No, like it was largely an extension of existing measures. There wasn't enormous new measures there that were really headline grabbing, and you would say, wow, I think we're on a different trajectory here as a result of what was announced last week. You know, the funding that they've allocated in the National Development Plan towards clean electricity through DSB, that should have a positive impact. The other thing that I would point to that is slightly broader, but I think could be very attractive for installing, say, renewable power, would be that the government did announce in the budget, and they have been signalling this in recent weeks, that they're going to try and shift the emphasis in planning and balancing basically the common good, as they would call it, versus the rights of the individual to object to measures. So we know one of the big problems, for example, with introducing like wind farms, power in general, has been plenty of local objections. So there does seem to be a push to try and rebalance how the legal system interprets the rights of individuals to object to these things, which in theory you would think should make it easier to install some of these projects that they have in mind. Like there was a report last year by the European Commission by Mario Draghi, former president of the ECB, and he basically looked at how long it takes in terms of all the processes and permitting and planning objections that you get in the system. And he reckoned that for wind energy in Ireland, it takes about 10 years to get through all of the processes. So you can see why we have been lagging behind in terms of delivering some of these things, even though geographically we would seem to have a natural advantage being a coastal country.
As it does rely on county councils up and down the country, do you think this is hopeful, as I suppose we'll have to wait and see how much of an impact it's having?
Yeah, you're right to say it's important how local authorities interpret this, but ultimately almost any large project ends up in the courts. It almost ends up with judicial. So ultimately it does almost inevitably end up at a higher court eventually.
Do you find the measures towards climate change frustrating for you working in this constantly?
Yes, like there's lots of aspects of our work where our specific recommendations aren't always exactly heeded. One of the first questions I'm often asked is, you know, are you sick of being ignored? The short answer, which is yes, but I often think about what would happen if we weren't around. Right, so we might think, you know, budgetary policy is moving in a direction that we don't think it should go, but maybe it would be even worse if we weren't around, right? And I think, you know, people that are thinking about the green transition and working on issues like that, you can often think that maybe progress would be even slower if it wasn't for some of the work that's being going on, building the awareness of these issues, offering the kind of constructive solutions as to how these things can be resolved. Like more specifically on like issues like we've kind of tried to make this as concrete as possible for the policymakers in terms of even if you don't really, you know, particularly care for greening the environment or making the health benefits or any of that thing, if we could even just outline the financial imperative for the Irish state and the cost that we will face if we don't hit our targets, and we would hope that would focus minds as well to kind of give a more tangible sense of the cost we'll face if that doesn't happen. That doesn't seem to have had a huge impact on policy as of yet.
Neil Skeffington of Novelplast explains how his company is putting the social into ESG. From supporting staff well-being to engaging with the local community, we explore what meaningful sustainability looks like beyond environmental metrics.
Novelplast is a PET recycling company. PET is a ubiquitous plastic. It is absolutely everywhere. It's in your water bottles. It's in the carpets of your car, your carpets of your house, your clothing, your bed, your fridge. All the food packaging pretty much comes from PET. So we recycle it here in Gibstown in County Meath, and it ends up with our customers where they turn it back into useful products.
So if we buy a punnet of grapes in the supermarket, the plastic package would be made from your pellets.
Probably is made from the pellets. Your meat trays in the supermarkets. I think every meat tray in Ireland has material from us at up to 40-50%. So we're probably in every fridge in the country. I could be in your beds because it goes into duvets, it goes into pillows, it goes into mattresses. There's a huge array of areas. It goes into diapers. So you could be, if you're changing nappies these days, you could be touching some of our plastic every time you're changing one of those nappies. So there's a huge variety of uses for it. So we work with some cool customers in Ireland here to turn that back into products that are useful, and we use them in everyday life. We also put a lot of effort into other sustainability initiatives, both within the company and with outside the company. And the reason we do it is the reason I'm so particular about my bins at home, because if I'm not doing my bins right, then who bloody is going to do the bins right? So that's why we try and put a bit back into ESG, environmental, social and governance. And especially on the social side of it, because it helps with educating the next generation. And when people see the right thing being done, and there mightn't necessarily be a return on investment, and quite often there's not. But I think it feeds an energy into a younger generation to make them want to do the right thing.
What's the educational side of the company?
Yeah, so we've several initiatives that we do with schools. I go out and I give presentations in schools, primary schools, secondary schools. They have green weeks in schools these days, which is something that there was never in my day. So I get invited out to present to the children about what sustainability actually is. And I break it down to as simple a topic as possible, because like kids, when they hear people talk about tons of carbon and emitting tons of carbon, like, I don't know what that is, you know, so kids aren't supposed to know what that is. So they can't picture it. So I really try and break it down to as simple a topic as possible, which is what we should be doing for everybody, really, not just the kids. And I typically talk for about an hour, and I bring all samples of the plastics that we recycle and what we do with them and what we turn them into, and like, you can really see the kids coming on a journey, and I find it more daunting speaking to a classroom of kids, and sometimes it could be 120, 150 kids there, and trying to keep their attention for an hour, I have to keep it as interesting as possible, you know. So by the end of it, like, they're fascinated by plastic. Going into it, you can see that they don't really know much about it. They think plastics are bad. They see it on the news, where you might be on Sky News and you see a turtle with plastic wrapped around its head or whatever it might be. So they automatically think the plastics are bad. So I bring them on that journey and show them exactly where plastics are used and how we recycle them and how we can get them back into the circular economy, and they're typically fascinated by the end of it. So I get a great buzz out of that. But we also pay for beach cleanups a few times a year with local schools here, where we'll pay for the bus and we'll bring them out to a beach. We do it in collaboration with Antashka, I think, who organized the beach cleanups. So we fund that, and then we gather up all the waste when we're finished. We typically do it for 2 or 3 hours, and then we'll gather up all the waste, and we gather a huge amount of waste. And then we talk about the different types of waste and how we should be disposing of our waste and what's recyclable and what's not recyclable. And again, like, you know, it can be hard to hold children's interest, but I think when they can see it in action and they can see what a difference that their 2-3 hours of work did on the beach that day, you can see it in their eyes that it not all of them, but you can't expect to bring a whole class with you, you know. But the majority of them, you can see it in their eyes that they feel that they've achieved something that day. And if that makes one of them think about not throwing a piece of packaging out the window of the car some night on the way home, job done.
Neil Skeffington there talking with student journalist Philip Keegan and Niall Conroy from the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. Really interesting piece. Irish to Protect is brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Cumasigh na mBan with the television licence fee.
Irish to Protect, brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Cumasigh na mBan with the television licence fee.